I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
Had he any sense of the consequences, there's no way that he would have taken part in that. But I don't think that anyone could guess that a man as basically simple as Jackson could have known really what it meant, what he was doing. His livelihood was taken away after the 1920 season, and with it, really, his life. He lived another 30 years, but not very happily.
Joe Jackson played outlaw baseball in South Georgia for a time, then ran a liquor store in Greenville, South Carolina. Ty Cobb once came in for a fifth of bourbon. Jackson did not seem to recognize his old rival. Cobb finally asked, "Don't you know me, Joe?" "Sure, I know you, Ty," Jackson answered. "I just didn't think anyone I used to know up there wanted to recognize me again."
We're back again with Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Ken Burns, whose brand new documentary Prohibition begins October 2nd on PBS right here on the TV Time Machine. Ken, that was a clip from your documentary Baseball telling the story of the Black Sox scandal, and in that clip, the banishment of Shoeless Joe Jackson from the game. How important is the game of baseball both to this country and to you personally?
It's huge. It's the only game that's accompanied nearly every decade of our national narrative. It is the national pastime. There was a time when it was unrivaled in its popularity, but in good old American marketplace, competition is a good thing. It's still hugely important, and it is such a radically different game, and I think we forget this. All the other games that we play involve getting a thing across the goal line, into the basket, into the net, whatever it is, with a clock. And this is a game in which there is no clock, the only game in which the defense has the ball, the human being scores, every park is different, and it's one of the games that teaches you lessons about life that are so deep that it is in some ways beyond description. I mean, people who fail 7 times out of 10 in this game go to the Hall of Fame if they do that for 20 years,
right?
Like Shoeless Joe Jackson will not, because of the gambling. It reflects our strengths. It reflects our weaknesses, as that Black Sox scandal suggests. And I found it as a perfectly logical sequel to the Civil War series. If the Civil War defined us, as the novelist and historian Shelby Foote said in our film, then if you wanted to know what we became, you could, I suppose, continue to study American history as just a sequence of presidential administrations interrupted and punctuated by wars. But you'd miss so much else. Here is a game in which those presidential administrations and those wars figure quite prominently, but it also deals with labor and ownership tensions. It deals with immigration and assimilation. It deals with race again. It deals with popular culture, the nature of villains and fools and heroes. It's got everything in it. And you can, you know, Jacques Barzin, the great sociologist, said, "If you wish to know the heart and mind of America, study baseball." I agree with him.
We talked earlier about our concern when it comes to this generation and their lack of knowledge about history and the future of our country. Are you concerned about the future of baseball?
Not at all. In fact, by playing the clip from the Black Sox scandal, you're dealing with the fact a scandal much greater than the recent steroid scandal. I place, in terms of the order of magnitudes, the steroids a distant third. The first would be the exclusion of African Americans for systematically for decades after decades, denying us some of the greatest players who ever played the game, forcing them into separate but athletically equal Negro leagues. And of course, Jackie Robinson's arrival is for baseball as significant as Abraham Lincoln and the forming of the United States and many other signal moments in our larger political history. It doesn't, on the surface, have much meaning or significance because, after all, it's just a game. But the story of Jackie Robinson is, for example, one of the great stories, not just in sports, not just in the United States, but one in all of world history because of the forbearance that he carried. This is a game that requires enormous equipoise, and yet, distracted as he was by death threats and kidnapping threats against his wife and his children, he was able to put up a Hall of Fame career. So this is a great and important story, the gambling story of which the Black Sox scandal is but the only one caught manifestation. And then finally, I think you get to steroids, but it's fortunately behind us. Nobody, and I can reassure our baseball fans or the fans that have turned away from baseball, that despite the inflated home run hitting and prolonging of careers of some pitchers, no pitcher won 25 or 30 or 35 or even 40 games, which would have been the statistical equivalent of hitting 73 home runs in a single year. Nobody hit 400 for a season that Ted Williams did back in 1941. No one had 56 straight games where they had a hit, as Joe DiMaggio did also in 1941. But now that we see, give it perspective, and in my business that's called history, it doesn't have, to me, the huge title importance that, say, the gambling scandal that went on for decades, just only noticed until the Black Sox scandal, and of course the exclusion of African Americans do in the larger scheme of things. And that's the other great gift of history. It provides you with some perspective that permits you not to panic.
Yes, that's true. That's very true. Ken, your most recent documentary is Prohibition, which begins Sunday, October 2nd on PBS. Tell us why you chose Prohibition to be your latest project.
I don't want to, it's really great to have conversations, and when you work on a project for several years and you get your feet wet, you get, involved, your mind activated by stuff. All it really is trying to tell a good story. And this is, I was drawn to it because it's a good story. I worked on it for many, many years because there are, turns out to be, hundreds of wonderful stories. And the three-part, nearly six-hour series that we produce that will run on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of October on PBS is just the expression of our love and excitement about those good stories. I mean, too often documentary films are somebody telling you what you should know and already arrived at end. And the last time, that's called homework, the last time I checked. And we're, on the other hand, we'd rather go into something we don't know about and share with you our process of discovery. Isn't it so much better to say, hey, you'll never guess what I learned today, and pass that on? And so what you find in our story of Prohibition is I think, helps take those superficial images we have of Model Ts careening around rain-slick Chicago streets, Tommy guns blasting, or the flapper in the short skirt and the bobbed hair dancing drunk on top of a tabletop in a speakeasy. They're all there, and our film is sexy and dangerous and exciting. But there's a whole nother story and many, many other levels to this that we were thrilled to learn about and to share. And so it becomes very, contemporary if you read the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes. There's nothing new under the sun, it says in Ecclesiastes 1:9. So if we weren't already aware of what the subject of this film was, if I had told you this is a film about single-issue political campaigns, that's wedge-issue campaigns that metastasize with horrible unintended consequences, that this is a film about the demonization of recent immigrants to the United States, that this is a film about smear campaigns during presidential elections, that it's the story of a group of people who feel like they've lost control of their country and want to take it back, you would tell me, Ken, you have just abandoned history for contemporary politics. And I would say, nope. These are only a handful of the themes that Prohibition engages. And not once in our film do we say with a neon sign, see, kind of like today, aren't we? It's just what happened.
That's
just
right.
As the Civil War engages themes that seem so contemporary about the role of government, states' rights versus a strong federal government, about race, about all the different things, imperial presidencies, weapons of mass destruction capable of destroying, people in ways that they hadn't before, a sea change on social, political, and military level. So, too, Prohibition is just one of those subjects that seems to be firing on all cylinders, and I wanted to know about it, and I wanted to try to tell as many stories as I could, or I should say we could. This is a film co-directed by Lynn Novick.
That's right.
And a longtime collaborator.
Well, as you're saying, the story of Prohibition actually contains many stories and explores issues far beyond the bottle, as we'll hear in the following clip.
Hillsboro, Ohio, was the home of a frail wife and mother named Eliza Jane Thompson, the daughter of an Ohio governor. Like so many temperance workers, she had experienced the impact of alcoholism firsthand. Her eldest son, a clergyman, had become addicted through a doctor's prescription and then died in what was called an inebriate asylum. All she had been able to do was grieve until the evening of December 23, 1873, when a visiting temperance lecturer urged the town's wives and mothers to take to the streets in protest. If they did that, he said, they could destroy the liquor business forever. Thompson's husband, a local judge, thought the idea of women marching in public sheer tomfoolery.
I ventured to remind him that the men had been in the tomfoolery business a long time, and suggested that it might be God's will that the women should now take part.
Ken, tell us about the early women's temperance movement and ultimately its social significance.
Well, you know, we found that Prohibition was a woman's story from start to finish in so many ways. You know, we think of Al Capone and other figures, and it's true that the Anti-Saloon League, which is makes the National Rifle Association look like, you know, elementary school kids in terms of its ability to organize and influence elections. But from the very beginning, in the early 19th century, when we have to understand, our first episode is called A Nation of Drunkards. We just drank so much more, and since distilled spirits were a relatively new human thing, only a few centuries as opposed to the millennia that human beings had been distilling and fermenting things to make a mildly intoxicating beers and wines. Liquor had just changed the dimension. Americans drank because of the inability to get reliably pure water, and because life on the frontier is tough, and because life, period, is tough from all the chaos we've talked about. And Americans drank way too much, and women, of course, suffered. Salaries were squandered at the grog shop. Children were abused. Wives were abused. They had no rights. And so the sort of triple, the trifecta of causes, abolition and suffrage and temperance went along together. And there are extraordinary women's movements. And all through the 19th century, sort of spasmodically, because the power of alcohol and the need just to, you know, put your foot up on a brass rail on a
right.
Saturday night or a Sunday when it's your only couple of hours off from a brutal, brutal work schedule in the field or in a newly developing factory in a newly industrializing country, it would go. But it would pop up here and it would pop up there. And Eliza Jane Thompson is one of those powerful, powerful moments where somebody just says, enough, let's stop. And she leads some women out of a church and they go down and they shut down some apothecaries and convince the doctors that were the pharmacists not to sell alcohol anymore or write prescriptions for it, closed down some saloons. The movement took off, and, you know, that happened across many states, and all of a sudden it died down, you know. This was a really one of the first time women had organized and banded together in public protest, and alcohol was a safe way to do that. It was thought that if you could cure the problem of alcohol, you'd have better families, better husbands, better communities, better a kind of utopian vision, which was very much in keeping in line with late 19th century American thinking. But no one ever stopped to think what the consequences of it were. That if you've got a serious, and let's not forget or poo-poo the fact that alcoholism was and still is. A serious, serious social and health problem that afflicts about 10% of the population, we just made the egregious error of applying the solution to 100% of the population. And for the first time in United States history, we had an amendment to the Constitution that actually limited rather than increased human rights and is, to our great credit, the only amendment that's been repealed.
Well, we're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with filmmaker Ken Burns, who is traveling with us on the TV Time Machine.